I wanted to give you a little bit of information about materials for performing. Generally speaking, if you have use any kind of copyrighted materials, I've mentioned this before, you certainly need to get permission for that. And usually you get permission by purchasing reading copies. It will specify it pretty precisely on the material, what you have to do in order to get copies. Here is what the copyright says on this particular material. Permission for a group reading or performance of this play is obtained with purchase of a drama play kit from Contemporary Drama Service, Box 457, Downers Grove, Illinois. That's an old address, by the way. Any other use or presentation is illegal. All other rights are reserved. It is a violation of copyright for anyone except Contemporary Drama Service, Arthur Merriweather Incorporated, to reproduce or duplicate copies of this manuscript. Additional copies can be purchased from them at the above address. The right of performance is not transferable, and any use is strictly forbidden in cases where copies are loaned, hired, or purchased secondhand from a third party. So there are very strict rules about it, and generally speaking, I think you're advised to follow their rulings on this, because, among other things, it keeps the writers in business. It keeps them writing and gives you formal permission for use of it.
Could you interpret that for me? That means that if you buy that copy, the rights come with it.
When you buy the play kit, and there's a set of copies, it doesn't say, sometimes it says on these sheets how many copies you have to get for a formal play kit.
But if you can't loan that to anybody,
you cannot loan it to anyone. And in some cases, they will say that this gives you the right of only one performance or one set of performances. In other words, if I would use this material here at Holden Village and then I'd want to use it again in Tacoma, I'd presumably have to get permission again. Now here is a verification of the right of performance. Here's what they send you when you apply for that. And this is called a royalty certificate. It says a royalty fee of $6.50 is due for any performance or at another location or for any additional series of performances after the 1 year period. So for an additional amount, I don't know what I paid for this, but for an additional $6.50 I can do additional performances. But it's pretty well spelled out what you can do. When you get a perusal copy, which this one was, that is strictly for you to read through in order to get an idea what the play is about. So then you send for the additional copies for it.
The material that is used for discussion or educational purposes that does not apply to that.
I have generally assumed that you have to read the fine print sometimes, but my general interpretation of that has been that if you use it just for educational purposes, it's not necessary as long as it's not used in a production of any kind. And this is regardless of whether you charge for it. The performance. Now, a couple other things about this. By the way, that's why I do encourage you, some of the material, there's a lot of material available that does not cost, that is cost free, and that people write with just the idea of, anybody use it, I've done this, and anybody use it. And so a lot of the materials that you get out of the Lutheran youth packages, or any of the church use packages, that is usually available for copying. And a lot of the things, of course, I've passed out things to you that can be freely copied. But you always have to look for the small print. Another thing I wanted to mention, here is, in this material, there's a sheet that's called production notes, and sometimes that can be very helpful to you. just gives you some ideas of how you could set up your production. But always use this with your own situation in mind. You know, you may get some good ideas from it. You may look at it and say, that's not exactly how I want to do it. Because you can visualize it in your own church setting or your own camp setting or whatever it may be. Not every play comes with production notes. Sometimes they leave you free to do whatever you want, and you're always, of course, free to do whatever you want. Now I want to talk just a little bit about publicity. I have some feelings about publicity on that, and I think it's good if you're doing something in church to let people know that you're going to do it. Those who are especially interested then can come in and do it. So we have a weekly newsletter at our church where we are now, and I generally will write a blurb of some kind that will announce that we're going to do the play. Now in this blurb, I try to give some idea of what the play's about, and then I also list who is going to be participating in the play. If it's if there are very specific parts, like we did a play on Martin Luther, and if there are very specific parts on that, we mention that, what role that they're playing. I do that because, generally speaking, I do not like to list the roles or the participants in the Sunday Bulletin. And in the Sunday Bulletin, we list it as it's listed here as the sermon and drama, such a sight to see, and then the author of the play.
You don't even refer to the Sunday Bulletin notes?
Sometimes, now let's see if I can find
it. Yeah, I guess I'm wondering why.
I feel if they're not going to list the ushers, and if they're not going to list the lay reader.
Right. we put a little, you know, on the side then. Mm-hmm. You know, not in the bulletin, so we list all the ushers all day.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, if you list the ushers,
then you just will list it.
Yeah, if you list the ushers and the organist and the lay reader and the whatever, then list the players.
Okay.
But if you don't, I feel that they are participants in the worship service, just as everyone else is a participant in the worship service. And you list who, you just say that it's here. Now here, this one listed it, the sermon drama, Voices from the Quiet, and then in the bulletin notes it says, a chancel drama, Voices from the Quiet, is offered in both services today by the Prince of Peace Players, which is what we call ourselves, made up of the high school youth. Director is Lois Beckemeyer. Now, pastor always does this to me, so I prefer not to have my name in there. Confirmation classes are also participating. So something like that, I think, is very reasonable and helpful, or, you know, even a little more of a blurb, but not listing of the participants in this. And that goes along with what I said, my emphasis on you are not giving a performance. You are participating in worship when you do chancel drama. I see head nodding from our new friend here. Did you just come in by any chance?
I've been here.
What?
What do you mean?
You've been at Holden Village for a couple days?
Yeah.
Have you? Okay, welcome. What is your name?
Mark Burdy.
We have other people involved in this. I don't know whether they're coming in late or just everybody took head for the hills.
I didn't do that, did I?
Everybody headed for the hills today. All right. All right. Just briefly now, I'd like to, since we're not going to go over this again, I'd just like to just kind of review what we have talked about in as far as chancel drama is concerned. First of all, what is chancel drama? Chancel drama is anything that is presented in a church setting, which can be, you know, either a formal church setting or an informal church setting or an outdoor church setting, that is done in order to clarify the Word of God. And so that gives us a broad span of what chancel drama is. It's not a performance, it's participation in worship. My theory on this is that anyone can participate who has an interest in doing it. They do not have to have formal training, they do not have to have special capability, but the interest in doing it qualifies them for a part in whatever you're doing, even if it means expanding the play or shortening it or, you know, whatever you need to do with the play. I generally do not have tryouts. What I have done, and I found this to be very successful, is we meet for the first time, you know, I'll let the young people know. And again, I'm saying, I talk about young people because I generally work with young people, high school or college age kids. I let them know that we're talking about doing this or we've been discussing this. Then we meet and we read through the play. Now this can be a brief meeting, generally, you know, after church or something. Stay for 20 minutes after church, we'll just read through it. And then have the different kids read the parts in any manner, you know, it doesn't matter who gets what part, just so that they know what the play is about. Then I ask them, write down on a piece of paper, numbered 1, 2, 3, which part you would think you would like to best do. Now, what comes out in this is if they feel like they don't have much time right now, they're involved in on the swim team, they can ask for a shorter part. It gives them several choices so that you can do quite a bit of juggling, and you usually can juggle very well and still give most of the people their first or second choices. Those who have not had much experience in it will very readily ask for some of the shorter parts because they you know, don't feel that confident. And so they feel like they've had a say in what they're in the part that they have, and they feel comfortable with it. But one thing, whatever role they have, they make of it whatever their capability is. They can get a very small part, and oftentimes, you know, someone may think, oh, I've got this dumb role, it really is dumb. And when they start working on it and we start building on it, they realize, hey, this is really a very exciting role. You know, it's really kind of a fun role. And usually this is what happens. Okay, from a practical point of view, I have used minimal props and costuming. If there seems to be a need for costuming, someone is a king, you know, something of that nature, I would go with the minimum. A dress outfit and a crown, you know, or, yeah, well, generally, I usually, most of the things I work with are put in modern setting. But just to give the symbol, a sash across a white shirt, anything that just gives the illusion of whatever type of character you're trying to portray. Props, I try to choose plays that involve the minimum of props. I make use of stools quite a bit. I avoid using chairs and tables if at all possible. And if you use those, you have to be very careful how they're used. And you always have to think in terms of how is this going to now interfere with the church service as things progress. When you use minimum props, you also are interfering in the very least way with the conclusion of the church service. So that, I think, is quite important. We did this thing on Martin Luther, and that, on the Martin Luther table talks, which did require a table. And they sat at just a regular table with a tablecloth on it and so on. Martin Luther and Fulton Langton wore just a plain black pastoral robe. The young students, who were actually portrayed by girls, wore black or gray slacks and a white shirt. and the two serving girls wore black skirts and a white blouse with a little red apron. So it was very minimal costuming. Those are my ideas, you know. You will go the direction that you want to go. You may really be into costuming, and that may be your big thing, so great. All right. I like to use make use of the church as much as I can. Don't feel confined just to using the front of the church, but give yourself space. Movement is important. Give your characters movement. Even if there's a lot of dialogue that seems to be fairly static, don't allow them to remain static, but keep them moving. And get them to break up. If they have something long to say, especially with young people who have not had experience with anything dramatically, they will want to say it in one continuous stream, you know. But get them to break it up. I thought of jumping out the window. But instead, I just went down and ate breakfast. You know, get them instead of, I thought of jumping out the window, but instead I just went down and ate breakfast. That's what they'll want to do. And if you have someone who has a natural flair for drama, they will break it up themselves, and they will put some of this pausing and motion in. If you have a newcomer, then you have to direct them to do that. You have to say, okay, say this over here, take a few steps, turn, and then add the other part. And you have to help them to introduce those kinds of things so that they don't become glued to one spot or in one position or in one particular way of standing, but give them variety. Help them to add variety to what they're doing. After a while, it'll flow. And if it doesn't flow for that play, the next play that they're in, it will flow much better. All right. Be sure to remind all the characters that they are involved in the play at all times. They are always paying attention to what's going on. They are always acting, even if they are in more or less a freeze position and not personally involved in the action. They are still acting. They are still a part of what's happening. They are still alert to what's going on and responding to it. And that sometimes, they'll need a little help with that, especially as you get towards the concluding practices. You have to stand back some time and just observe, are they staying involved? But especially if you're working with teenagers, keep in mind that if you're going over and over and over some parts, they're not going to stay involved all that time. They're going to be spaced out. But when you start really getting it to flow, you have to really snap them to attention that they stay involved with the play. It is always important to warn them that if there is laughter for any reason or anything that interrupts a baby crying or a jet plane overhead, that they just quietly wait. It's sort of a freeze action thing, but they wait. You need to remind them, especially about laughter, because they won't be alert to the fact that somebody's going to laugh. We have a pastor who has a real guffaw, and he will always sit out when we're doing these, sit out in the congregation, and if something has a touch of humor to it, he will just really chuckle. So our kids are alert to this, that they wait until, and of course the congregation will kind of follow with that. They'll wait till that's passed and then go on. Otherwise you miss some of the most important points by trying to talk through. I have some rules that I stick with very distinctly. One is no chewing gum, and one is no hands in the pockets. Okay? So they always you know, I'm always on their case about that. The most important thing, I think, of all, and this is my last point, is sound projection. If you're going to do anything in church or in any setting that is has any importance at all, the individuals have to be heard. They have to be heard. And sound projection is very, very important. And that needs to be worked on from the very beginning. From the very beginning, even when they're first reading, stand in the back and say, I can't hear. You need to project and help them to understand what you mean by the throwing of the voice in a forward position. That is extremely important. If you have someone who talks extremely fast, and teenagers often do, one of the best ways you can help them with that is to get them to break it up into phrases. If somebody speaks well, you know, don't encourage that. But if they are running their sentences together, this dramatic reading introduces people to something new but not so new. The new is the word and the concept of Leviathan, an English word which means sea monster. Now that all runs together. And you have to be really careful if you have someone who tends to do that. Get them to break it up into phrases and pause. Or even say it with them, which drives them absolutely crazy. But repeat their lines with them. And they will finally slow down just to get you off their case because they can't stand you doing that. So that sometimes helps. Hi. Let's see. If possible, try to get by without using microphones. They limit your ability to move, your movement. They limit your ability to move around. So if you can do it without microphones, it just gets too confusing and it's too confining. Okay, any questions in general?
No, I really appreciated your remark about having them stay focused because it's so true that as soon as any one of them darts their eyes up to see if someone's looking at them or if they can see where their mother is sitting or something, it breaks the focus. It's amazing how quickly the eyes reveal the degree of involvement. Mm-hmm. And how it shifts the focus for the audience. Mm-hmm. So that even if the audience is able to hear, if someone that's up there doesn't keep their eyes where the focus belongs, then the audience forgets for that instant.
Yeah.
Wonders, who are they looking for? Oh, there she is. Oh, yes, no, where are we? Mm-hmm. And by that time, you know, volumes have gone.
Looking for friends or parents, that's totally out. I mean, that's absolutely out. I find that they tend to daydream more than they tend to look around for people, because if they have a feeling that they're totally involved in what they're doing, they don't tend to look for friends or family or anything like that. I think you have that with the smaller children, but rarely with the older kids. But they do tend to daydream, you know, ho-hum, I've been through this 40 times, and, you know. And you have to watch for that, and you have to spot that right away, you know, and stop the play. Hey, John, you know, where are you? And they have no idea, you know, and I really alert them to the fact that when I stand in the back, I see so many things that they're not aware of. You know, if they grin or poke somebody, I'll stop and say, you just poke somebody. They think that's not observable. Another thing that I think that you have to watch a lot is this. and they do that when they're nervous. And one thing I tell them is spread your feet. Then you've got a good solid base on which to stand. You feel comfortable. You don't have the feeling of, you know, falling over. And that's helpful to them. But this is observable by the
people in the pew immediately as a nervous action, and they have to be alerted to that.
Do you have much, nurses are so careful about respecting, you know, drawing out their first choices and trying to work with what they're inclined toward. Do you have much difficulty, especially with teenagers, people committing themselves and then not being able to follow through on it? And what do you do then when, you know, you come up and it's 2 weeks before the presentation and everyone else has worked 2 weeks, but this person who's always promised to come and come with line learned finally is not following through?
I find that there's a lot of peer pressure on them to do it.
Yeah.
The other kids get disgusted. And finally, you know, there's peer pressure. Or you see them sitting in the back and somebody is working the lines with them in order to get them, to shape them up. They kind of case on each other. You know, they get tired of coming to practices if George doesn't have his lines down one, you know, week after week after week, because it slows the pace. Mm-hmm. And I will, you know, draw this out too. At the end, you know, after we have a practice, I'll say, okay, now, George and Alice, you guys are holding things up. Now get those lines. We need them right now.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, if someone has taken on more than they can handle, they usually are alert to that right at the beginning. I mentioned this Martin Luther, the one we did on Martin Luther. The boy that was going to take Luther came in after the second practice and said, I just cannot do this. It's more lines than I'm going to have time to memorize. And so we talked it over with the whole group, and Luther and Melanchthon decided that they could switch. The other boy said, well, I've got a little more time, I can handle it. And so they switched. Because I had talked to the first boy and said, I'm not sure whether the other one is going to have time for it. So I had kind of alerted him to that as a possibility. So he had been giving it a little thought. So you have to be, you know, you have to know your kids. You have to be alert to what they're up to. And if they make a commitment, you know, they have to pretty much follow through. And I do try to line up in advance at the very first meeting. When are we going to practice? And if you cannot be at practice, you must let me know. Don't tell Alice that you're not going to be there, and Alice comes that night and tells me George is not going to be there. You know, you let me know that you're not going to be there. And then each time I'll say, all right, now next week, is there anybody who's going to be absent? And they tell me, because there are involvements, you know. And then what I do is I try to emphasize then the practice on the parts where the main persons are going to be present. And we try to move around those that have a specific problem, a job, or some other involvement. And also, the kids have been pretty good about saying, I'm not going to have much time, and so do you have a little part? Or do you have a narrator's part? See, because then they have the possibility of having the script before them. And so we've used some of our good kids who really are very good at it in some of those ways. It's tricky, I know. All right. Very quickly. I'd just like to have you glance through two scripts here that I just wanted to talk about a little bit today. Maybe I'll do one today and then I'll do the other one next time. This is a chancel drama called Voices from the Quiet. And it is from Bread for the World. And this is one that we did that sort of involved the congregation in it. The congregation all had inserts in their bulletin like this. Okay, I have enough here that you can each have.
I've done this.
Have you?
I've done this. Where are you?
Yeah.
All
right. Have you done it? Have you?
I didn't read this. I was with.
Yeah, okay. All right. Now, what this was originally set up with, I think there were four characters, and we made it into two, four,
I think
six,
it was originally
seven.
Two.
Right. It was originally two people. We made it into seven. We made it into seven because we had enough kids that everybody, you know, wanted to be in it, and it made less memorizing, and it involved more people. We added a narrator, who, by the way, was one of those people who didn't have any time to be in the play itself. And he came out. Today we will present a short play entitled Voices from the Quiet. The cast is made up of seven of the Prince of Peace players, plus a chorus of junior high and high school students. These were contramands that we tried, that we included just for the sake of getting involving the contramands, because they, because we've done a lot of these, they get interested in being involved. So we made a chorus in the back row out of the contramands. Later, you and I will become a part of this chorus. In a moment, three people will enter. They will be unaware that the rest of us are here. Let's remain very quiet and not disturb their conversation. Okay, so then the three actors came in. We must be early. Nobody has arrived yet. Certainly is quiet here. Certainly is. I don't know when I've seen the church this quiet. Well, let's just try. You three across the front here. Just read actor one, two, and three. Colleen, you start.
We must be early. Nobody else has arrived yet.
It certainly is quiet in here.
It certainly is. I don't know when I've seen the church this quiet. I guess everybody will be along soon. It's almost time to begin.
Well, that can speak fast. I thought it was already time.
I wonder what the sermon will be about today.
I don't know. I wasn't here last Sunday. You've got the bulletin hit there, but why don't you look and see?
Looks like we're going to hear about world hunger.
World hunger? Between you and me, I'd rather hear about something else. Thinking about hungry people makes me uncomfortable.
Uh-huh. I know what you mean. Have you ever been hungry?
Sure, haven't you?
Sure. But I mean really hungry. I mean, like going without food for days at a time.
No, I've never had to do that. I went on a diet once. Refrigerator was always near.
I fasted for a couple of days and last year, but I always knew I could get food if I really wanted it.
I guess if we really don't know what it's like to be hungry. I mean, really hungry. I wonder how many people there are in the world who are really hungry.
I don't know, but I'll bet there are close to a million.
Then the chorus in the back said, we, now this is out of your bulletin, the sheet, and so the people in the pew could actually follow that. We are the hungry. We number more than 450 million. We are one out of every eight people on the face of the earth. We suffer from chronic undernutrition. We are permanently hungry, that is, we never get enough calories to make a normal life possible. Many of us are slowly dying, and our numbers are increasing. Now see, you had the three people coming in the center here, and they, but by this time, are up front. Now after this recitation then, or the reading from the contramands in the back, then you had a new group of two who came in looking puzzled. Did you hear something? No, but I was just reading here in this bulletin insert that there are nearly 500,000 hungry people. Billion. Okay, and then they go on their thing. Then the chorus in the back again says, we are the children. More than half the world's children hungry are children, and so on. Now this went on. Now in between, while they were doing the recitations, or while someone else was discussing, like the center group of three was in a freeze position, and then those two over at the side. Okay, so you have the two over here, then, who are talking. These three are frozen. Okay. And then you have the back group as the chorus. Then you have there were three that came over on this side. And so eventually then you have all seven in here, and when the one group is talking, the other is frozen. Now halfway through, halfway through On page 3, see, all the way we've had this chorus of "We are the hungry." Now, right in the middle on page 3, if you look at your brochure or your little flyer, you'll notice that then it switches to "What can we as Christians do?" Mm-hmm. Notice right in the middle, the last actor one says, "What, you know," they're asking, "What can we do?" And actor one says, "Well, we might pray about it." Then the narrator came up again and he said, "We'd like to ask the people in the pew to join us as we respond to these concerns." And so, and take the, you know, he recommended that they take the bulletin and follow from the flyer. Okay, so from that point on then, they responded, the congregation responded in chorus. So it was participation by the congregation as well. Now, that's one way of doing it. Now, you two say you saw it in a different way. Did you both see it with two people doing it? Uh-huh. Did they have it memorized? No. Okay.
It was not on the morning.
Yeah. You saw it on Sunday morning, but it was not memorized. It would be very difficult for two people to memorize this whole thing, you know, without spending quite a lot of time. Besides which, I feel like it gets boring after a while, always hearing the same two people, and especially when it's a lot of discussion.